This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chun Han and Kusu Chuang. Julian Ng is getting ready to speak to the Vice Chancellor of UiTM on The Breakfast Grill. Professor Emeritus Datuk Dr. Hassan Syed will be joining us shortly to discuss how the university has been affected by funding cuts, as was recently announced by during Budget 2017. Thank you. And, you know, really, UiTM is the worst hit by those funding cuts. So the question really is, how will it compromise, or will it compromise, the quality of education being offered in the varsity? So that's a question to put to him. If you would like to join the conversation, please text us your questions. You can WhatsApp us at 016-201-9000. That's 016-201-9000. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Julian will put your questions to Professor Emeritus Datuk Dr. Hassan Syed, the Vice Chancellor of UiTM. Back to looking at the local business scene, guys. Sarawak has targeted to bring in at least 32 billion ringgit in investments from China this year. According to the new Chief Minister, Dato' Amar Abang Johari Tun Uping, he said that Sarawak wants to embark on an aggressive drive to attract Chinese businessmen, industrialists and government-linked companies to invest in the state. And in fact, China has become one of the state's biggest investors, a potential to be the biggest investor.
Headline numbers look great. 32 billion, you know, and of course last November, 144 billion ringgit, trumpeting, you know, headlines went crazy and everybody was, you know, smiles galore. But you've really got to ask yourself, how expensive is this cheap, sorry, that was a bit of a Freudian slip. How expensive is this Chinese investment, right? Because from a headline perspective, fantastic, but at what cost to Malaysia, right? Does this money represent economic colonialism by our new Chinese masters, right?
Well, actually, I had a recent chat there, and this is a shameless plug. You can check it out on our podcast. It's on The Breakfast Grill with Professor Sage of Harvard. And he says that, well, if you take America, for example, you know, they've long been, you know, like huge dollars of FDI all around the world. Has it really resulted in favors for them, though?
No,
like, you know, exactly.
No.
So he argues that, you know, like FDI is FDI. You can somewhat contain it in an economic or just an investment sense on a project to project basis. But to say that, you know, or to suggest that we might be beholden to our, you know, our new investors, our overlords, that might be a bit too
small. Well, let's get granular, right? How many jobs will be created? How many locals will be hired? How many local corporations will be utilized? How much has been, you know, openly tendered for?
Right.
But when you look at the East, you know, the East Coast Railway and the high speed railway, when and if Chinese consortiums win those jobs, we'll have to ask ourselves, how competitive was the tender process? Is there real money invested in the system, or is it just in the form of a project such as this?
But you know, Chuang, can we afford to be picky? Because it's not like
Precisely.
There's money sloshing
we cannot.
Around.
We cannot, and that's the problem. You see.
Yeah, exactly. And just to give you some context, like that 32 billion investments, that's from China alone for this year for Sarawak. Okay. In 2015, Malaysia as a whole brought in about 50-something billion ringgit worth of FDI. I'm just going to scroll down and find my numbers here real quick. I can't seem to find it, but yeah, about 50-ish. So can you imagine, and that's for Malaysia as a whole as of a couple of years ago. So really, there's a huge jump here, not just for Sarawak, but for Malaysia's FDI attractiveness as a whole. You know, so again, goes back to what Melissa is saying. You know, can we say no to, you know, that huge, you know,
yeah,
of funds?
Because if you
the answer is no.
Yeah,
you look at
previously, it was, you know, the big investors were Japan, were US, Singapore. I mean, the money has dried up, so to speak, from those markets. China is the one that's going around investing everywhere. We saw them, you know, really pour money into the
Correct.
Philippines, into, I believe, Indonesia as well. And not just in this region, but also in the African continent.
Correct.
So all these places China is really investing in. Why don't we want to get a piece of that pie? With the condition that we're not, you know, selling off strategic assets.
You know, some years ago, there's this guy called John Perkins. He wrote Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much China's turn now because, you know, at the time, America invested in infrastructure projects all over the world, whether it's dams or highways or bridges or buildings. And now China's doing the same thing. How high value are those jobs? How much debt burden is being applied onto the country that is the subject of that so-called investments, in inverted commas? And if it really was such a headline thing to trumpet, no pun intended, you know, why isn't Huawei putting their R&D stuff here? Why isn't Alibaba putting their engineers here? Why aren't, you know, the high-value stuff being put here? Or Xiaomi, for example.
But how do you determine that balance, Chuang? I mean, how do you say that, okay, this number of jobs merits this investment, but if you're not going to bring in this number of jobs, then we don't want your money? I mean, how do you determine that? Well, that's really quite crazy, isn't it?
Well, actually, no, not that crazy, because there have been several government initiatives, you know, that do stipulate these kind of conditions.
Really. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you need to have this many jobs created. For example, when you go through like the kind of KPIs in the ETP and the NTP and, you know, all these other government initiatives that we have here in Malaysia, they have very specific key milestones that have to be hit. So if FDI is the capital that comes in and facilitates us achieving those goals, then I say why not? And real quick, it's not just the infrastructure space as well. You look at recent headlines. I've got the Edge in front of me. I've got the Starbiz in front of me. We look at foreign funds eyeing some poultry players. That's in Starbiz. From the Edge, it's Chinese firms keen on SCOMI's real operations. So on one hand, you could spin it to say that look, Malaysia's economic activities, our industries here, our infrastructure projects, our goals, they are attractive enough for Chinese people or Chinese investors to say, hey, we'll park some money over there.
But it's not high-value stuff, Han. I mean, when you look at it, right, the East Coast Railway, right, these are just laying tracks and putting some rolling stock on those tracks. I mean, some years ago, the second bridge, Penang Bridge, land reclamation, this is not high values. This is not going to put you on the global agenda. This is going to be very, very expensive, very high value projects, but they're not exactly high value.
So how would you define high value then? Are you talking of the Googles, the Facebooks, that kind of high value, or what do you mean by high value?
High value means exactly you do the nuts and bolts, the thinking stuff here, the R&D stuff here. And since time immemorial, the real brains happens back in the home country. Whether you're a German, whether you're a German car maker like BMW or Porsche, and your best engineers are doing the best design work and the best stuff on gearboxes back home in Munich, or whether you're Google and you're doing your best, R&D back in Palo Alto, or whether you're China and your best engineers and building the Huawei P9, which is a fantastic phone, is being done back in Beijing or whatever, right? It's all your high commodity, low value stuff that is being done abroad in low cost areas.
And
that is the way it's always been. This is checkbook diplomacy.
Right. But in the absence of that, being fostered here locally, then wouldn't those projects be the gateway, so to speak, right? So with them rolling out these projects here, that can be seen as an opportunity for local engineers and just local professionals to then see how it's being rolled out on
technology
the ground.
Transfer,
right, and then maybe learn along the way. Likewise, you look
Let
at.
Let me ask you a question, huh? Yeah. How much did Malaysian engineers learn from the Mitsubishi tie-up with Proton in 1985?
I'd have to get back to you. I was 2 years old then, man, buddy. Come on, man.
The answer is not a lot.
Okay.
Right? Because if you got all the brains, would you pass on some of your brains to other people? You wouldn't, right? Why would you?
But at the same, if you're going to draw upon the historical context, we have made leaps and bounds, right, in terms
really?
Of... Malaysia, why not? Compared to where in the 80s, 90s, we were very reliant on rubber and whatnot.
Can a Malaysian car maker build an entire car up from ground?
Oh, okay, but then...
Yes or no? Simple answer, yes or no?
Yeah, Proton has to ask Gili that one, lah.
I'm not naming any names. Okay. No, you can't. Look at the latest Pradana, right? Or rather, the two Pradanas ago. It's a Honda Accord in disguise.
Yeah, but how many... Okay, then let me expand it then. How many countries in the world can actually do that as well, right? It's a very select few, right? So, you're thinking of Japan, Germany, the States.
If your country was prudently managed from a fiscal perspective, you wouldn't need to go hat in hand to neighboring countries which have a lot of money to burn.
Look, essentially what I'm saying is that in an ideal world, yes, in an ideal world, we would love to be, these masters of technology and be at the cusp of all these breaking technology and all these engineering feats. But are we there? No. Is most of the world there? No. And I think being realistic, so if we can get some expertise from abroad and basically ride their coattails, which is essentially what we're doing, so be it then. Might as well take what we can get.
Well, a couple of listeners have weighed in. Victor Liu has tweeted in to say that the Chinese are bringing all their stuff, so there's no transfer there. And Vasu has WhatsApped just to say that high value in his book means having a multiplier effect, which is a good definition to have.
My neighbor is actually from the CREC. They're actually working on the railway stuff here. So,
Okay. Well, speaking about
learning, I don't know.
Speaking about investment, guys, Tabung Haji said that they will allocate 2 billion ringgit for real estate investments in the UK and in Australia over the next 3 years. Now, according to the group managing director, Datuk Sri Johan Abdullah, he says that, well, they haven't made any final decisions just yet, but they have identified a building which they claim will provide an 8% yearly return.
Right. Just to put that 2 billion in perspective, their assets under management is about 64 billion ringgit. So 2 billion is like a, what, like a 2-3% of that. Also, I mean, their exposure to real estate, not that much. Currently, well, as of October 2016, it was at 6%. You know,
hey, so, didn't they buy TRX?
Yeah, well, so that was a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Right. You know, so I would assume that is factored because the TRX deal was 2015. Mm-hmm. So these numbers are 6% real estate. For overall AUM. So yeah, they look to be increasing that segment of the pie, and that also follows, you know, what like the EPF is doing as well. They're trying to, you know, expose themselves to
overseas investments. Yeah. But I mean, real estate, is that considered risky?
Well, I think because when you look at the AUM portfolio balance right now, I think they have about 40-odd% or slightly over 40% equities, which is quite high, because I mean, if you want to take some risk off the table, you take it off out of, you know, risk on assets like equities.
Mm.
And you put into properties, because I think right now their property is about 12-13%, and they want to raise that to about 15%, which is quite conservative. And I think that's all right, because at the end of the day, you're managing funds for pilgrims, right? So you don't want to be taking too much risk on your balance sheet.
Yeah, speaking about risk, at the same time, you got to ask about the forex risk, because if they're looking to buy those properties in Australia and the UK, you know, with Australia, and it's I think about 3.2 right now to the ringgit.
If they buy a British building, huh, it's going to be about 5.5 right now, which is some ways down from the 6.2.
So in that regard, it's about Australia.
But guys, both the UK and the Australian property markets are overheated. They're really, really quite expensive at the moment.
To which now I'll ask you, Mel, which is more overheated, stock markets or property markets?
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're both on the, you know, they're both on the Bunsen burner right now.
Yeah, you're right.
Both
quite hot or so. All right, we've got the Breakfast Grill coming up just after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Professor Emeritus Dato' Dr. Hassan Said, the Vice Chancellor of UITM, will be on the grill. Send in your questions to 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio News. Next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.